Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Hit Chat Chit Chat. You are here with myself, Connor Reynolds, and JP Fashone. JP, how you doing, sir?
Doing good. We're back. Back at it again.
We're at it again. Another week. Tally it
another
up.
Another week. Oh, yeah.
Jumping straight into it, we've been chatting for a little bit. I immediately want to talk about something we mentioned a couple episodes ago. It was the tournament to where there was a 2-hour drop dead time. My team ended up hitting for 18 minutes as the away team. We hit all the way through the no new inning and then also all the way to the drop dead time. The game was tied 4-4 going into that inning. And they ended up saying that because we never completed the inning, that they would have to go to the past previous completed inning. And then we ended up only tying. So we're in the same organization tournament, game day out here in Colorado. And they have since gotten rid of the 2-hour drop dead time there, JP.
Okay. Interesting. Just,
no new after hour 45. So okay. We
makes a little bit more sense.
Right. You know, it's one of those where it's just, in my eyes, it's the same thing or sure. Should be essentially, unless you're the home team making a run for it.
Sure.
Then it's like, sure. All right, like I get it.
Yeah.
We are the home team in this situation. It is 4-3 and the, going into the bottom of the sixth inning. There are 10 minutes left before no new inning. When the first pitch is thrown to the first batter, there is about 9 minutes. Well, I had talked to our guys in the little pregame huddle, and I told them that we might have to do some interesting things this inning. So leadoff hitter gets out, and 2-3 pitches ground out. Second hitter gets out in about 2-3 pitches. There's now 5.5 minutes left in the clock. Well, when the current hitter, the third hitter in the inning, was on deck, I had walked up to him and told him, like, hey, if I kind of give like the old kind of choke sign when you're up to bat, I need you to strike out, purposely get out. And he kind of like looked at me weird. But he was like, okay. So he goes up, first pitch is a curveball in the other batter's box, and he just like swings like at a ball at his face, maybe 20 miles an hour. Same exact thing the next pitch. And then all of a sudden the catcher calls time, runs out, and then the infield calls time and runs in. And they're all having like a little team meeting. And I guarantee you that their coach had said something like, make it a long, like, don't give up the lead, but making a long one. You know what I mean? Or I don't know, something along those lines. And and I'm sitting there and I'm like, well, you know, this is why we're doing it with 5 minutes left and not 1 minute. Umpires never come out and have them, you know, disperse or anything. So clock's at like 4 minutes now, but they go back. They finally throw the third pitch, which if I was them, I would have hit our guy. I don't think. Like, I don't think our guy would have still swung if it was like coming at him. Maybe, but we ended up striking out and inning flipped. I had all of our parents kind of going like, what like, what's going on? Well, you know, we're two pitches into the first batter of the next inning, game time or no new inning expires. And so we play throughout. Unfortunately, we gave up a couple of more runs. We couldn't make it back. We ended up losing it anyways, but it was like, unfortunately, due to the time constraint of tournament baseball, we had to have essentially a sacrifice at bat with nobody on and two outs just to give us another chance. And I was like, I wonder how, like JP, how you feel about it. Because you haven't been in the, you know, travel ball coaching arena for a while. You coached in college. now you're working on the training side of things. Like, for you, how do you view that side of things?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough balance. I think coaches like you get put in a tough spot. I mean, ideally, obviously, I think the best option is just not to have a time limit. But I also understand that that's not really a realistic possibility, just with game scheduling and umpires and things like that. And I think it just comes to, like, balancing. Are we trying to win? Or is it worth letting the kid take the at bat because, you know, that's more valuable? And I don't think one answer is going to be the right answer for every situation. Like you said, like, you know, you chose to do it kind of 5 minutes in, and, like, you know, nobody on, two outs, like, kind of makes sense. Now I can get some kids some more at bats, you know, hopefully later when we, you know, stretch it out. And so we get some more at bats there and we win the game. And, you know, if you get to win, you play more games, and so guys get more at bats, and so you kind of have to balance that out. I think the interesting thing about youth baseball and travel ball and the time limits is it really comes down to the umpire sometimes too. So I think the coaching, like, balancing you know, development and at bats versus trying to win games is a tough spot to be in. And I think it just comes down to, like, how comfortable your parents are, what the expectation is with the players, and kind of just going with your gut, honestly.
It did suck for the kid to essentially tell him, like, hey, you're purposely going to strike out right here. It was like, damn, that kind of sucks. But then again, it's like, you know, what's the difference between having a kid bunt with a runner on first?
Right. Like, and, like, what were you thinking? What was kind of the thought process of, like, you know, were you just like, hey, we're going to win this game? Or was it like, hey, you know, let's kind of bite one here and see what happens. You know, what was kind of the thoughts going through your head?
Yeah. So I had told myself going into it, like, hey, if we get two guys out right away, I don't necessarily see us, and we were also in the bottom half of the lineup, I don't necessarily see us going to where with 5 minutes left, two outs, nobody on, we got to score one run at minimal. And that would be essentially the same case if we went to the next inning, shut them out, and went to the bottom of the seventh. We were then essentially still, we were in the same spot. And so it was like, all right, do I want to make it to where we make it close to the clock? Like, let's say this guy does get, like, you know, a hit, like he goes to first or he walks, and then the next guy has a long at bat, and then they go up, and then they have a pitching change. And then next thing you know, the game is, you know, we roll over on a pitch when they come back from it. And because the no new inning had just hit, maybe in the middle of that pitching change, you know, game's over, it's 4-3, where we had just brought in a new pitcher in that sixth. He was looking good. He didn't get as many warm-up pitches prior. And he came in a pretty tough spot with bases loaded, only one out. Three runs ended up coming in. There was a walk, like a hit-by-pitch. And then I think there was, like, a fielder's choice. And then we got, like, a strikeout. And so, yeah, we had just blown the lead. Like, our starter went long. Like I said, he got into dudes just getting a little, like Texas League bloopers. That's essentially how they got the bases loaded. And then we had to walk, bringing in that new pitcher. So I was like, all right, that dude had finally kind of settled in. He's coming into a clean inning. I feel really good that he's going to go 1-2-3 right here and make it to where we're coming into the dugout, no outs, like, you know, with the momentum of just getting three outs right there. And it just didn't work out that way. We had been very good late in ball games lately. And so I was like, you know what? I want to roll the dices with that and not have the clock necessarily be a constraint to us, which it was, but just for one out.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the best way to go about it is making that decision based on can I make it so the time limit doesn't restrict play as much as possible? And I think if you go about it that way, you're probably not going to make the wrong decision very often. But like I said, the umpires play a big part of that too, because, you know, they could have gone in the no new inning, let the kids, you know, do their meeting and kind of take their time, dust off the plate and go, ah, sorry, like time ran out.
Right.
I umpired through high school and through college, and it's an interesting experience being on that side of the ball. I think it definitely makes you appreciate how hard the job is, but also like, you know, these guys aren't professionals doing this. They're just, you know, out there for the heck of it, getting some extra money on the side. So, and I've umpired with guys who are there for the paycheck, you know, hey, I don't get paid by the hour, we're going to do the thing and get it done as quickly as possible. But one of my first umpiring experience with the time rule, we're coaching this team, similar situation, like team's down by a couple runs, they're home team, and they kind of want to give themselves another inning. So the coach guy hits a single, two outs, coach just sends them, you know, just send them around the bases. They get tagged out, new inning starts. And we probably have 2 minutes left on the clock before like the no new inning starts. And I was like, okay, like, you know, let's roll the next inning. And the other team's coach was very upset. Very upset that I allowed them to start a new inning, and his point was, you know, hey, like, you can't let the coach just like not play baseball, like they, you know, and just like run out the inning, and which is, you know, I think a fair point to some extent, but like you said, like if the clock is going to dictate the game, then I would rather have the coach send the kid. And let's start a new inning, and let's actually, because then you're actually playing baseball. Yep. Let's play a full inning of baseball, and let's figure out who's going to win, instead of just letting the clock dictate it. So I think going about it that way is the best way to handle those situations. But man, the clocks on baseball and the time limits, I always hated it growing up. I hated it when I was coaching travel ball teams. It takes something away from the game, I think. You know, as baseball continues to push for faster and faster games, I think you lose some of that. I don't know, tempo, pace,
feel.
Kind of the back. Yeah, you lose kind of the feel of what a baseball game is, of the two teams kind of going back and forth. So, yeah, it's a tough spot to be in. But yeah, going about it that way is, I think, the best possible option.
It's a game where I view it as like, you know, a little bit of war. Obviously there's no bullets or anything like that, but there is a dude that's throwing the ball really hard at you. And yeah, there is a dude with a, you know, weapon in their hand swinging it really fast. And it's one of those two where it's like, you know, can I get in this guy's head if I just stare at him and intimidate him? Can I, you know, bring my heart rate down? Can I slow down the moment? Can I do this? Can I do that? Because it's a high input and effort sport every single time. Like, as a pitcher, you are going as hard as you can. Like, you're not saving yourself for, you know, two more innings. Same thing as a hitter generally. Like, you're swinging to do damage every single time. You're not going to say like, hey, I'm going to swing really slow right here to save myself for my next at bat. And so it's one of those where like, you want to put out your best every single time, every single pitch, every single rep. And if you force or push, I feel like, that too much, then you start making it to where you almost have to start making sacrifices. Like in basketball, like if you go super, like if you go balls to the wall in the first and second quarter, you might be dead in the third and fourth, and you're not worth it. You're not worth too much anymore. Now, obviously you want to work on endurance, but you know, if you start pushing the baseball game closer, you're going to start making it to where guys are rather, you know, saving themselves in the early at bats. So that way, you know, when the time matters more, because now time is a part of the equation, I think it's going to get unfortunate if it gets to that point.
Yeah, and the time in between plays is as important for players than than the actual play. Recovery. Like you said, yeah, and slowing the heart rate and getting the mind ready and preparing to put out at 100%, in big situation, especially late in the game, and you add the clock in there, and now you feel a little rushed, and and talking about like, hey, is trying to win the game or development more important in that situation? And that's where I think, like, if you can remove the clock, that's the right option, because, it didn't work out for you guys, but if you guys got to hit in that last inning, your guys are going to be a lot more focused. You're going to have time to kind of like take that deep breath, slow the heart rate, and be ready to go 100% for that at bat versus, trying to rush through the inning to get done before the play time expires and score those couple runs, getting in the box too quickly, not actually taking their best swings. And when in reality, they're going to get to the next level and not have to deal with that. Removing that clock and giving your guys a chance to be at their best when the time comes, I think is more important than, giving up one at bat over the course of the summer.
Great transition point going from talking about the difference of, playing tournament baseball, whereas when you're playing, you're not more so as thinking of the mechanics and the process. You're more, results driven. We're now transitioning to more of the fall, where a lot of guys are going back to school, they're going back to wherever they're able to maybe train on a more consistent basis. Maybe it's a less consistent basis, whatever it is. A lot of guys are going back to school with a different environment than where they've been at this summer. JP, for you, what do you see generally as the difference for guys that are going from the summer into that fall transition?
Yeah, a little different, depending on the age. Because like you said, for the fall, a lot of times for high school guys, that's kind of the development period is the fall, and college guys to some extent too, but they're also, changing environments, going back to school with their coaches. So I think the big thing for college guys that I work with is getting them prepared to translate what they've learned and what they've worked on here to their college environment and what their coaches are going to be working on and talking about and their terminology. But also just transitioning the mindset from like, I'm going to be the best player I can be. I'm going to try and work on all these things to be the best player I can be, to I'm going to go win a spot. I'm going to go get on base a ton. I'm going to take my walks. I'm going to wear pitches. Like, I'm going to go all out for that kind of thing to win a spot in the lineup. And for a lot of guys, that transition seems to be a little rocky at times, because the focus transitions from me to we. And I think some guys struggle with that because they put in a lot of time over the summer training and working on their craft. And now it's time to essentially forget about that to some extent and go, hey, we're going to go win a ball game. And if that means I got to lay down a bunt, if that means I got to kind of stick the elbow out there and wear one, then that's what we're going to do. And so I think that where you really see it is kind of the swing changes too over the course of a year, of guys kind of adapting to that kind of focus, that competition focus, going forward. But what's it like on the youth side? I mean, the younger kids, their schedule is a lot different, especially for high school kids out in Colorado.
Oh yeah. So when we're going from summer, not a lot of guys are making it in as much as they should. And what's going on is they're traveling or they're practicing where they're, their school more often or whatever. And they're viewing it as, well, I don't have to go in and train as much. And then once this summer starts to taper off, some guys are going to be going into the football. Sometimes I see guys on Sundays just because of Chasa in the area. If you're playing football, you have to have Sunday off for guys. And so sometimes I'll get my football guys coming in on Sundays during the off season, our off season, their in season for football. But some guys are going into fall ball. I won't really look to see them generally if they have the kind of the same mindset from the summer guys of saying, you know, if I'm in season, I don't have to train. Not the case if you guys are listening, but, you know, too many guys right now have that idea. So those guys, I won't see them probably until October area and stuff like that. But a lot of the time when guys are going back to school, they're going to either have to pick the training side or their fall ball team, just because their fall ball team probably is going to be practicing like at minimal once, maybe two or three times a week, plus traveling on Friday, Saturday, Sunday games and stuff like that. So they got to have a little high school time to be able to get some work done as a student athlete. High school guys, it can get a little tricky. Unless they're like pretty dialed in. Outside of that, summer and, you know, the fall time are pretty similar in that area. On the youth side with our organization though, we were going to not have a fall program. We were just going to do summer with a high demand of pretty much all of our families wanting to also play fall ball. We are going to do that, but we're giving them essentially an entire month off. I have a feeling a lot of them are going to come in during that month off time and just do a lot of lessons. And so I'm looking forward to that, getting them in. And then they'll play probably until about last week of September, first week of October. And then pretty much all of our youth guys will go off and play like basketball or wrestling or something like that. So pretty much from the beginning of summer until about October, just about the same.
Yeah. And that's what I think, like you said, they got, you know, school, football, things like that. That's why I think even college guys, when they get back to school, it's managing time and workload that really changes, you know, in those training windows over the summer where you don't have all those things to kind of manage. It's really easy to kind of get focused in on like, these are the things I need to do, because you got plenty of time to do them. Versus athletes, you know, in season playing football, things like that. You know, I'm tired today. You know, I don't really want to do it, which is, you know, something that it's a decision that they have to make that they wouldn't have to make otherwise. And sometimes the right decision is, hey, I'm gassed. You know, I had football 2 days. I, you know, lifted this morning. Whatever it is, like I'm physically not capable of training. And other days, like you said, some guys kind of might make that decision, even though they probably could and should. So I think managing the workload side is what really trips guys up when it comes to just having academics and all these other things going on, is the big transition into that kind of those competition phases, or times of the year.
On the training aspect of guys going in, let's use a college guy as an example. A college guy going from training with you this summer, going into their school's fall. What does that look like for you? When do you start to do you transition or change your approach of the training program? Like, do you guys have like, all right, 2 weeks before we ship you off back to school, you know, we start this protocol of like returning to school? Or like, do you guys have a set amount of time, or do you guys change anything or nothing? How do you guys go about and handle that?
Yeah, I think the big thing that we really change is starting to coach less in a lot of ways, where we really want to make sure that the athletes are educated and dialed enough that they can go back to their school, their coach gives them cues, environments, whatever it is, and they can kind of integrate some of the things that they've learned and worked on into that new environment. So like getting them to the point that they can train themselves is the big thing. But kind of the secondary part is kind of what we change on our end. Right around start of August, we'll transition to a lot more, a few more competition days, where it's less, you know, one pitch type of work, bat speed type of thing, and it's more of mixed pitch machine, short boxes, where they're really getting to the mindset of like, I have to compete and find a way to do damage and put the ball in play hard, versus getting so focused on like mechanical changes or ball flight goals or things like that. Because at the end of the day, you know, your stat line doesn't tell you what, you know, how hard you hit your single. So a bloop hit with two strikes is as good as, you know, a line drive to the right fielder that one hops in. So I think a lot of guys take advantage of that time to kind of understand that sometimes you just got to put the bat on the ball and find a way to win that at bat and win that pitch. But it's tough. It's tough for a lot of guys to kind of flip the switch, and we kind of do the best we can with changing the environment. And I think the biggest thing is just educating them on kind of what that transition looks like and what they're going to have to deal with.
So beyond the education side of just, you know, talking it out and making sure that they have an understanding of that difference, your training aspect of anything doesn't change. You guys start to incorporate like more live ABs, more machine. I know you guys are heavy on a lot of that stuff already. Do you guys look to do any difference in that?
It just ends up, it's definitely a lot more live at bats. That's a good point. I mean, the pitchers are, I think the transition for the pitchers is a lot more fluid just because they can kind of control things a little bit easier, you know, especially with their on-ramping and throwing program. So we'll have a lot more live ABs as college guys start getting ready to kind of throw pen, live bullpens and things. So we just have more arms. But it's a lot more randomized practice rather than so blocked. So instead of seeing one pitch, you're going to see mixed pitch, you know, today. And things like that, and getting them used to having to make more swing decisions. And that might be the better way to describe it is we transition from bat speed to more, you know, doing power and kind of output. We transition more to swing decisions, swing at good strikes, really working on our approach, making sure that our bat to ball skills are really dialed. So we can kind of let the output stuff that we've worked on all summer really translate into you know, more mixed pitch settings and game settings.
Is there more conversation aspect or just straight data video where are you a little bit more raw towards the end of just, hey, this is where we're at? Sometimes myself, yes, and during training, if I know we don't have games for a little bit, you know, I'll throw a little sometimes a little, maybe too much reality, or for some guys, maybe a little too much false confidence if they've been, you know, a little bit down, to maybe kind of jumpstart and get that going a little bit. But before games, you know, we want to be, you know, make sure we're honest with what kind of what everything is going on and stuff like that. Do you change anything in that, those meetings, or do you have more meetings, or how do you guys kind of go about that?
Yeah, that's a great point to bring up. I mean, like you said, when games start, the swing you got is the swing you got. So, I think the big thing that transitions for us is and I think should transition for all coaches is going from how do we make adjustments to our swing to be more successful to how do we change our approach or what we're looking for with the swing we have? How do we make the swing we have as effective as possible? So like quick story, we had a junior college kid, pretty small, short guy, like, you know, 5'6", 5'7". Moved the bat very fast. Didn't have a ton of bat speed. And so his large chunk of his early summer work was bat speed, weight room. You know, let's hit the ball harder. And as we kind of creeped towards him leaving for school, we kind of got to the point where it was like, hey, like, your bat speed's not going to be high. Like, you're just not going to, we're not going to get to the point that we want to get to. So the training now transitions to, okay, if we're not going to hit the ball crazy hard, we're going to drop that launch angle and we're going to hit a bunch of line drive singles, and you're going to be the best bat to ball guy on your team. And, you know, he ended up doing pretty well. And now he comes back in this summer and we kind of, you know, try and get that bat speed cranked back up again and that kind of thing. But I think making the swing that you have as useful or as effective as possible heading in, whether it's approach or training or changing your training plan to kind of execute the things that are going to make you successful or kind of make you productive on the field. And that's true with every athlete. And I'm sure you see this with, with high school guys and even youth guys that come in where it's like, hey, dude, like you can't hit a high fastball. So we got a tournament this weekend. Let's not swing at high fastballs.
It's sometimes when you have to break it down to that point where it's just like, hey, you're not the greatest at this yet. You keep trying to be. You should stop. And then them to just be like, oh, really? It's like, oh, you haven't noticed that? Like that high fastball, you've swung and missed that the last 30 times you've tried it. And you just next time, right? Like I'm all for having an optimistical, you know, outlook on the situation. But sometimes we have to look in the mirror a little bit and go, ah, that's not me.
That's not me. Yeah, I can't do it. It's totally fine because there's always going to be holes. In guys swing, I mean, especially as you move up a level, there's just no way you can cover everything. It's not possible. But that's where, like, lucky for us, pitchers aren't very good at locating their pitches. So even if I can't hit a high fastball, the likelihood that this guy is able to execute three high fastballs in a row, pretty small. He's probably gonna miss at some point. So the hitter's job transitions from like, hey, we got to work on hitting high fastball because you can't hit it, to, hey, we got to work on when that dude misses once down, you got to hammer that thing. That's going to be it.
You can't miss.
You can't miss because that he's going to go right back to it and he's you're not going to be able to hit it. So, and that's something that's interesting to hear, you know, Tanner and Ayton, those guys talk about when they work with big leaguers is, you know, they got a lot of, you know, advanced scouting and stuff. And a lot of things that they talk about with these guys is, you know, this guy's got a nasty changeup and you're terrible at hitting changeups or pitches that with that movement profile, you're just not good at hitting. So like, this is the pitch that he throws 30% of the time to right-handed hitters. And that's the only pitch we're going to look for this game. And like when it comes, you got to hammer it and you got to know what you're doing with it. So even at the big league level, I think they have to make those adjustments to kind of hammer the pitches that they know they can and understand that you're not going to be able to cover all the pitches and the entire plate all the time.
And I've described this to some of my guys as it's very difficult to not miss a specific style of like sedan or truck or this or that. If you're looking through every single different type of, you know, car when you're driving on the highway, it's going to be very difficult. But if you just narrow it down to just saying like, hey, I am only looking for like yellow Jeeps, like it's going to be very difficult to miss that yellow Jeep because you know what you're looking for. You know and understand what the goal is.
Yeah, and you start seeing them all over the place. Just like when you're buying a car, like the car you're thinking about buying, you start seeing it everywhere. And I think that helps with kind of the pressure and the anxiety of like, oh, I gotta like, you know, make swing decisions and stuff. Especially early in the count, if you're looking for one thing and you know you have a swing that just hammers that location, that pitch, whatever it is, it kind of takes some pressure off of you. I think. You know,
oh yeah,
get in the box and go, I'm looking for this and I know I can hammer it because I've done the work to be able to handle this pitch.
Best thing that I've noticed being able to get the 16U team that I work with to accept bad umpire calls is to not necessarily say, hey, that wasn't a strike, but he called it a strike. If it's a pitch that you let go, that is telling me, you, everyone in the dugout that just wasn't a pitch you felt you could do damage to. When it's 0-0, it doesn't matter if the umpire, I mean, down the road it will and, you know, changes counts a little bit. But, like, honestly, like, if you don't feel like that's a pitch you could do damage to 0-0, I don't care if it's a ball or a strike. I want you to take that. And give ourselves a chance.
Absolutely. That's such a good way to think about it.
And now our guys, instead of like when an umpire makes a bad call, getting like upset and that ruins the at bat, it's like, I wasn't even planning on swinging at that anyways. So like, whatever. You know what I mean?
Whatever. Yeah. Now it's next pitch, and okay, cool. I got an approach for my one strike counts. Like, I'm good to go. Doesn't matter.
Exactly. Now, yeah. I wish I could tell everybody that the umpires get better the higher you go, the, you know, more, the better the pitcher is. No.
But, I mean, I love the way you put that, because it, I think a lot of times, in talking about that transition from training to the games, there's a lot more things that feel out of the athlete's control in a competitive environment. Right? Umpires calling strikes. You got a dude on the mound that's going to try and strike you out, versus kind of facing a machine or hitting front toss, whatever your drill work is. It's a lot more controlled. You can kind of make adjustments. It's all on you. And so giving athletes a way like that to kind of take a little bit more ownership of the outcome, you know, like you said, like, hey, I wouldn't get a swing at that anyway. So if he calls a strike, he calls a strike, but it's not going to change my decision. They have a little bit more ownership of that environment and be able to control that a little bit more, which once again, I think at the end of the day, all this stuff just kind of goes back to, like, how do you bring down the anxiety levels? How do you bring down the pressure? How do you lower your heart rate? And all of that stuff kind of all folds back together. And that's something that I don't think athletes think about very often when they're training. And then it comes in games, it comes in seasons when you're fighting for a spot and you're fighting for a place in the lineup, that pressure starts to get to you. So having those things, you go back to, like, hey, I'm in control here. I'm the dude that gets to decide whether I swing or not. I'm the dude that gets to decide, you know, what my approach is. I'm the guy with the bat. So you can do whatever you want, but I get the decision at the end of the day.
For a lot of guys, I had noticed to where just by that one first pitch, if they get upset by it, with it, them being 16U, essentially their entire at-bat was gone. And it was like, all right, how do we work this out? How do we make it to where, because the outcome's not going to change, but if we can change their perspective of what that is, that's what we're fighting for. And that's another thing that we like to talk a lot about in when we're just practicing and stuff like that. I mean, when we ran scrimmages, I was the umpire behind the mound, and all of our dudes were like thinking I was just a giant asshole because I was literally – for the other team, oh, dude, we were scrimmaging this other team. Their pitcher was not good. I made him look like Pedro Martinez, dude. Like, this dude was hitting spots. Their catcher's diving. Like, I didn't. And when our pitcher was up, if our catcher, you know, at all, just boop, boop, ball. Nope.
Auto.
Ball.
Yep.
And we had our, like, little post-game meeting, and it was one of the first scrimmages that we had as a team. And they were like, oh, and our pitching coach was pretty pissed off at me too. I was just like, you know, like, I was like, boys, like, this is how it's going to be. If you cannot figure out how to control, the more an athlete can, like you were saying a little bit earlier, the more an athlete can be in their, like, natural heart rate, blood, like, if they can be in their natural state, whoever is able to accomplish that better, I feel, is going to be able to win, because you're thinking a lot clearer, you're seeing a lot clearer, you're not over analyzing, you're not overthinking, like, you're in a lot more clear eyes, clear heart, can't lose. What was that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Friday Night Lights.
Yeah. But I mean, like, that's true. Like, if you have a clear mind, and you're not going to have more of a clear mind than when your, like, heart rate is down and you feel comfortable.
Yeah.
That's where you got to get to. And so, one other, do you know a Robert Riggins on Twitter?
I do know Robert Riggins. So
I've had him on the podcast before. Have you, like, gone through his whole story?
I've read a little bit about him. I know the Lackawanna County coach a little bit.
Bro, so, you know, wild. Wild, man.
I mean, incredible. Watching this guy's video, I mean, just to give our listeners a little context here, this guy made a showcase-style video of him slinging newspapers door-to-door because that was his side hustle when he's coaching college baseball to make some extra cash. And talk about a guy that goes all out and does it 100% and gives everything he has to no matter what the job. I mean, just a fun guy to follow.
Incredible human being. Had him on, just him going through his story of how he got to where he was at. And I had talked to him at the moment where he was still at Lackawanna County. And he has since now he's with the San Francisco Giants in their Dominican Republic coaching organization down there. Just an amazing dude. Had him on and stuff like that. But what he necessarily is going and is really good at is changing and making the environment as uncomfortable as possible. So he has a lot of things out on, and I actually have now, of guys wearing eye patches while they're hitting, of having white noise on when guys are hitting, of having guys hit with earplugs in. He's put out a lot of different studies on changing just a hitter's comfortability and environment when they're in the box and the outcomes that they can produce. It's pretty wild, dude. I'll send you over. He has his own website, I think, that has all of his different research studies and peer-to-peer reviewed. What was that? Papers?
Reviewed articles? Peer-reviewed
articles. There we go. Science? Yeah. Yeah. No.
He does really a lot smart, of the dude. Science. He does the science.
Yes. Yes. So if you haven't read any of that stuff, go check that shit out because it is primo.
And that's a big thing too with kind of transitioning to more like randomized practice and stuff. I mean, obviously, like we're talking about making training environments. I would have hated saying this as a player, but I really believe in making the training environment more difficult than the game. I mean, today we had the machine. We're doing at bats. Playing the hit track game. We got right-handed two seams, and then an absolute banger of a three-quarter curveball coming out of the machine. And guys are getting carved. I mean, guys got carved today because it's some disgusting pitches. And you know, it's 90 to 92 mile an hour two seams. And there we had one guy today. I mean, looked like he wanted to quit baseball after about two rounds. I mean, he was
Suey Watch
done.
Suey Watch.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he was done. But what was incredible was when you put him in that environment and you craft the social environment around that training. You know, guys are picking him up. You know, talking about kind of his approach and he's doing this and that. And he sits down and he goes, hey, I think like it's obviously not a good day. I'm not swinging it well. I need to take away one of these pitches and I need to kind of just shorten up and kind of just put the ball in play and just try and shoot balls into the other gap. And I was like, hell yes. And now granted, it didn't get much better. But he had the ability and like got a chance to practice that of like, I'm spiraling right now mentally. I am going down the drain of like about to lose an at bat. Just like your guys getting that first pitch bad call where it starts to kind of spiral and you feel that anxiety kind of go. And he got that opportunity to kind of take a step back and practice that. Okay, let's take a deep breath. Let's take a step back. Let's look at the situation. How can I be productive in a really difficult environment? And that pays huge dividends when it comes to the season and it's bottom of the ninth and you're up against a dude that's, you know, best in the conference and you got to make an at-bat happen. And giving guys that opportunity, especially heading into more of a competition out of the training is just not, it's just invaluable. And you can't get that without just making it a hard environment to be in. Tough environment to be in, like Riggins talks about, just making it uncomfortable in the box.
The more uncomfortable you feel in training, the easier the game feels.
Yeah,
100% every single time. When we have our infielders doing ground balls, we have a clock on them. If they don't get it over in 4.3 seconds from the time the ball is hit, the runner's safe. Yeah. Now, it's every single like,
it's stuff like that. Just like the little things. You know, it doesn't have to be huge. Put the infielders on a clock. Like, you know, not every kid's going to run that fast, but you better be that fast.
There's going to be one kid where it is runners on, you know, runner on third, two outs, ground ball to you, and it's the fastest kid in the country. You have to not panic. You have to be comfortable. 4.3.
Yeah. And it's like you said, you're just going to give yourself a better opportunity to win if you have the ability to kind of control your mental state, control the anxiety, lower the heart rate, and just kind of be where your feet are and let the situation play out and just trust that training. And then if you've never experienced that kind of pressure in training, then that's going to kind of get to you a little bit more. And really, like I said, I would have hated saying this as a player because I was the kind of player that was like, coach, just let me like hit some sweet backspin line drives.
Easy BP, baby.
Yeah, I just want to hit BP on the field, and like I hate hitting off the machine because like the timing's inconsistent, which it is. Like the timing of a machine is so much harder than timing an arm, but good, it should be, because you're going to see an arm on the mound this weekend and it's going to look like nothing. It's going to be, you know, so much easier.
It's a lot easier to say because that's why we're not playing anymore. We didn't train this way. And now it's like, hey, maybe, you know, all of our guys should train this way. But anything to add there, Senior JP?
No, I think just to wrap it up, like, you know, the big transition from training periods to competition periods and training to game is, you know, making the environment more difficult, making you more uncomfortable because the game's going to be uncomfortable. So continuing to tailor your training program to more challenging environments, I think is the big takeaway.
Most definitely. Most definitely. No shocker that we are on the podcast right here talking about player development, hitting, how to make players better. And, you know, we're both saying the exact same thing.
Weird. No surprise. Weird.
So weird. But thank you, JP. Appreciate you coming on, man. Three in a row. Now we're working on four.
Yep, absolutely. Back at it again next week.
Love it. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Really quick, if you guys have a chance, go check out my YouTube. Is RBI Baseball LLC. Just put out a new video, a little commercial, kind of about what we've got over here at RBI, all the fun little cool tools I get to use and stuff like that. JP, you want to plug anything in Twitter or anything like that?
Follow me on Twitter. Road to 1,000 Twitter followers begins. So JP Fasone 1 on Twitter.
Oh, let's go. All right. See you guys.
Have a good one.